Let me kick off with a challenge from Danny Alexandri. Is to determine how at least half of the cost of the scheme can be met through private sources. However you define that, ensuring it will be affordable to the UK taxpayers. So, as is the case in these things, Boris took that particular ball out of the scrum and then handed it on to TfL, and TfL handed it on to us. The size of the challenge is around 27 billion. So we've got to find half of that from private sector sources. So what did we do? I guess we tried to cover off all the different angles. Does he mean you've got to finance it from the private sector for half of it? Or do you have to find revenue streams, income streams that can support financing, whether it's public or private, which does not draw upon, let's call it, central taxation? So we tried to cover both off. And we had a few objectives. We wanted to identify a funding menu, because the world we live in, you need a menu. It's got to have a range of different sources rather than just one. It would be nice if we had just one, but we haven't. We wanted to learn lessons, particularly from Crossrail One, because if something's worked before, there's a pretty good chance that if you can make it work again, then it's going to be there's going to be less friction. It's going to be easier to implement. And we wanted to answer the question around, is it really feasible, is it really viable to get some sovereign wealth fund to come in and actually pay for half of this? So we looked at all of that, and we, one of the things that was really important to us, particularly in looking at the funding streams, the income streams, was to make sure that they were stable, predictable, that they would actually support the rather, large financing that was going to need to make this project happen. We looked at international precedents. I don't know how many of you have read our report, but in Appendix F, there's a lot of examples of what, other cities around the world do, and maybe we should be a little bit more open-minded as to how we adopt them in the UK. We considered the funding and financing question separately. They're different things. Funding's around the income streams that are going to support the financing. The financing is, where do you get it from? How much does it cost? Does it give value for money for the UK taxpayer? And as you would expect from a bunch of accountants, we wanted to be sure that they were robust, the assumptions that underpinned the analysis were robust and consistent, and actually, using a proper financial model, that they achieved the objective. We did that work, and what did we come up with? We managed to achieve a situation where over 50%, only 0.2%, I hasten to add, of the 27 billion requirement could be met through measures that were not from central taxation. And if you remember, one of the principles behind this was to try and use tried and tested methods. Project generated revenue around 20%. When you look at the revenue that Crossrail 2 will generate, and you look at the costs, the surplus that will be generated throughout the life of the project runs from about 300 million to about 600 million per annum. So that will help finance around 20% of the 27 million cost. The business rate supplement, we've already got that, it's 2 pence in the pound. Once Crossrail 1 is funded, if we continue with that, and take it to the end of the Crossrail 2 project, that would fund 15.2%. An enhanced mayoral sill, where we know already we've got the mayoral sill, it's about £50 per square metre. If we increase that, we can fund a further 5.8%. The uplift would be, and I'm just going to read my notes here, from £50 per square metre to £140 per square metre in the central activity zone. So we're trying to charge, development in the areas where, most value will be created by Crossrail 2. Some challenges in that, I accept that, but again, it's an area that's going to deliver quite a lot of revenues. At the minute, there's quite a lot of revenues being generated by the mayoral sill, and we should rely upon that for Crossrail 2. Also, resale of land and property. this isn't around capturing development value. This is about the land and property that's acquired at the beginning of the project to make the project happen, and selling it at the end of the project and getting an injection of funds. We went back to mayoral sale on the basis of looking at the balance between mayoral sale, section 106, and borough sales, and obviously this would take quite a lot of discussion and agreement, but we felt that there was scope to double that over the life of the project. And remember, we're thinking about inflation there too, over a project that will go on for a long period of time. So that would add another 5.8%. And then a council tax precept, which effectively is just taking the precedent we've got from the Olympics and applying that to Crossrail too. Again, you know, fingers crossed, would council taxpayers in London support a precept that would pay for transport infrastructure in London? We thought they probably would, although we realised there might be some difficulties with that. And again, we built inflation into that, so it moved from, I think at the minute, about £8 precept to £13.33, and that just takes into effect or takes into account inflation over the point. That takes us over 50%. On private financing, there's no way that we could see where we could get some sovereign wealth fund or anybody else to fund a project that would be far, far bigger than anything else that's on the stocks at the minute that's being privately financed. For lots of reasons, not least that one, it wouldn't be value for money. We'd have to pay a lot of money for that risk transfer. Two, we couldn't allocate the revenues to the private sector that would make any sense within the whole transport infrastructure in London. And three, we didn't see there was anybody out there with the capacity to fund it. So, you know, we're not going to privately finance this. We're going to fund it on the government's books through PWLB and other sources. And probably that's the way it should be. You know, it's for the public good. When you look at what's been going on in, we looked at Paris, we looked at San Francisco, we looked at Atlanta, Copenhagen, New York, Toronto, Chicago, and Melbourne. You know, there's a wide range of other levies or taxes that these cities can apply because they have far more devolved powers to help them pay for infrastructure. From stuff we're familiar with, you know, charges on development or land sales or property taxes and tax increment financing, which we've seen in the UK, to fuel tax, to additional VAT, effectively sales taxes, to taxes on tourists and the rest of it, and lots of other cities around the world in the same position as London are trying to extend their tax base and can extend their tax base with democratic support to try and support investment in infrastructure. You know, I guess the one conclusion that I would draw from this, and it's a London issue, but I think it's an issue for every other city in the UK, is that, you know, funding infrastructure projects is bloody difficult. And you need, you know, a wide range of different funding streams. And I think, you know, we've got to start trying to get our heads around that if we want this infrastructure, we've got to be a bit braver as to who we charge and how we charge to raise the funding to actually make these things happen, because they're expensive, they bring a great deal of benefits, but they're important for the nation.